Come here, boy. Come here, boy.
Woof.
What's that?
Woof, woof.
Hey, Mike, get over here. I think Chewie's saying that little Dirk's in the well again.
Woof.
Yipe.
And wait, what?
Yipe.
Man. He fell down head first again. What do you want to do about it? This is like the third time this week.
It's so much harder to grab him by the feet.
I know. I don't know. What do you think we should do, the Chewie?
Woof. Bark.
The Chewie says that he's hungry and wants a pizza, and, you know, Dirk can go get his own darn self out of the well. So, let's go get a pizza and go over some preview cards.
All right. I guess so.
All right. Come on, boy. Come on, boy.
That's actually exactly what I said.
What was that?
Woof.
Oh, right. Good. For a second there, I thought he could talk.
Hello again, and welcome to the Mana Pool. This is episode 115, correct, of the Mana Pool. World Wake Previews 2.
Yes.
And I just got to see Scott murder the cat. What for you murder the cat, dog? Oh, because the dog. Okay. Yeah. I mean, woof. Apparently. Anyway. Yes, World Wake Previews. We have no news. Any news?
We have no news. We got lots of previews.
Yes, we do. But before that, as always, we are brought to you by CardShark.com, a better way to buy and sell collectible card games. Yes.
Yes.
I have beat that to death over the last 2 years, and I'm going to keep swinging. You should totally go there and buy singles. It is mad cheaper than everywhere else. Yes. And we have forums and email and Twitter, Facebook, etc., etc., etc. So, I am the Chewie, lead host and lead dork or whatever the heck you call me. I'm the guy. I'm that freaking guy here at the Mana Pool. And with me, as always, are two-thirds of my dorks. You're my dorks.
Hey, I'm two-thirds of a mic. I kind of know the rules. And I know a little bit about the game's history, but not everything.
Near as all, damn it.
I am 1.1 Brian's, I guess. I'm feeling more Brian than usual today. But we have – if you've listened to the last episode, which hopefully you have, you'll notice that we actually did a fair amount of previews within a not inordinate amount of time. And today I'm going to do my best to stay on topic and stay on target.
Stay on target.
I love me some pork. And –
How come the fat white guy's name was Porkins? Come on.
Because George Lucas is a corny writer, that's why.
Yeah, George Lucas, love you, man, but, you know, hardly a prophet of our ages.
We no longer love him after the
poet,
the horrishness of the Clone Wars, or whatever that freaking new cartoon is called.
I haven't seen it. I
watched one episode. It actually wasn't too bad.
But so I'm here, and I'm gonna be talking lots, but I will try and stay on... I'll try and restrain myself from going on and on and on and on and on.
Stay on target.
Too late.
Yeah, really. And 3/5 of Dirk is apparently in a well, and the other 2/5 of Dirk are still the busiest man alive. Greenest, busiest. Would it be the greenest busy man or the busiest greenest? I'm confused. And luckily, taking the place of Dirk, I'm sure will be Scott's snide comments and the cats. So that's cool. Both the ones that live here and the one that lives with Brian. Right?
Right.
Excellent. So, preview cards. I have nothing to report other than let's do some previews.
Let's get right to it. The meat, the heart, the essence. The Chewie Center. The Vampires. Vampires.
Whoa.
Well, this first one.
Chewie is the center. Sorry. Oh my god, I left my toothbrush and toothpaste at Corey's place, and he offered to mail it back to me, and he mailed it back to me, and inside, with the toothbrush and toothpaste, were some homemade cookies from Mandy. And they were, she has come up with a way to make chocolate chip cookies that stay chewy. So she sent me some soft batch chocolate chip cookies that she made. And oh my god, I just finished them right before I ate dinner. They were before, mind you. Oh yeah, they were ridiculous. That's the chewy center for you. So just on the odd chance that Corey listens to this, which he won't, but tell Miss Amanda I said thank you. Now, keep going there, Brian, sir. Stay on target. Well,
why don't you go ahead and take this one?
I don't want to take this one. I want the other black one.
Okay. All right. Well, this is Anawan, the Ruin Sage. For 3 and 2 black, he is a legendary creature, vampire shaman. He's a rare, not a mythic rare, and he is a 4/3. At the beginning of your upkeep, each player sacrifices a non-vampire creature. Yes, that is the Abyss on legs that doesn't care about vampires. They keep redoing the Abyss, but making the Abyss work in like better and better ways. Like there was the Abyss, which I believe went away if nobody had any creatures, right?
Yeah.
And then they did Cult of the Grave, which was zombies, and that was pretty good. And they had the Magus of the Abyss. And now we've got Anawan, the Ruin Sage, and he has that same effect, except he can beat you upside the head. He is frail, he can be killed by a lightning bolt, sure, but also, if he's in a vampire deck, you're not sacking your guys, but they're sacking theirs. He's also featured prominently in some of the Planeswalker
stories,
comic strips, yes,
mm-hmm.
that have been up on the site. So you should recognize him.
Actually, as far as I can remember, he's the only Abyss variant that won't die for a lack of creatures.
Right, because he will never have to sacrifice himself.
Mm-hmm.
In theory. Unless someone makes him a non-vampire with, like, Nameless Inversion. Of course, that would kill him anyway, so shut up.
So, me boy changeling it is.
Yes! Wow, that'd be a dirty trick. I can see Mike doing something, and he's no longer a vampire. What?!
But the funny thing is the Amoeba Boy Changeling is a vampire.
Dun, dun, dun.
Vampire werewolf.
Actually, no. Werewolf is not a creature type anymore.
That's right.
It's a vampire wolf man. Mutant ninja turtle. Worm. Shaman. Anyway.
But not a teenager.
What is the type of the werewolves? Is it horror? I'll look it
up. No, it's wolf man.
Huh? Really?
Yeah, look up Lesser Werewolf or Greater Werewolf. Or the-
I've got Gather up right here. Lesser...
Stay on target.
Target on. Human Wolf.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, that's what I meant by Wolfman. Shut up.
Interesting.
All right, next.
Well, speaking of vampires, Urge to Feed. Nom, nom, nom. Looks more zombie to me, but, you know, that's just because of brains. For 2 black, I have serious phlegm problems today. For 2 black, it is an instant uncommon instant. Target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn. Already it's Last Gasp with an additional black in the mana cost. And who played Last Gasp? Everybody played Last Gasp. So, target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn. You may tap any number of untapped vampire creatures you control, including a Meboid Changeling. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on each of those vampires. So the creature dies, everybody jumps in and gets some om nom nom nom, and then they feel stronger. Upsides. Kill a creature. Other upsides. Actually, you don't even have to kill the creature, you just have to knock it down.
Yeah.
You can do this to a freaking 12/12 and still make your guys bigger. That's nifty.
But now they're all tapped, so you have other problems.
Yeah, well, there you go. We're not on there yet. Upsides. Kill a creature, hurt a creature, whatever. Make all your vampires or as many vampires as you want stronger. Instant speed. Yes. Downsides. Your guys are all tapped. Huh.
The best probably the best possible use of this,
EOT,
at least in limited, is somebody attacks you, you've got a couple untapped vampires, you go ahead and declare your blockers, and after blockers are assigned, but before you go to assigning damage, and obviously combat damage resolution since it doesn't stack anymore, you say, okay, and play Urge to Feed. You make one other guy smaller or kill it, and make your vampires bigger and wreck their combat. Yeah. And then untap and win.
Or at least cripple them. I actually really like this. The fact that it's instant speed means it's not completely useless. Tap all your guys, you know, now they're free to swing in for free. No, no, no. It's an instant, so you can do it at the end of their turn and come out way ahead in the deal.
I can see even decks that can support the two black, of course, that don't even have that many vampires running this. Just, hey, it's another kill spell, again, especially unlimited. But really, what I would say is, when you go to the pre-release, is this episode going to be up before the pre-release?
I'm going to really try. I'm going to take Friday off, so hopefully I'll post it then.
If you listen to this and go to the pre-release, or even after that, if you listen to this and you go to the release or whatever, or if you ever play limited ever again.
Yay, draft.
And you should and a guy has a couple vampires and he doesn't attack, and he's got two black open, you should really be aware of that. Mike, quick rules question.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, you can counter Last Gasp if somebody tries to target your guy and you play something like Vines of Vastwood, kicked or unkicked, to give it Troll Shroud for end of turn. However, if you do that here, they can still pump their vampires. Is that correct?
That is incorrect.
I was going to say, no, there's only one target.
If a targeted spell, when it comes time for it to resolve, if all of its targets are illegal, the entire spell is countered.
Yeah. Ah, that's right. I was thinking it would try and resolve as much as possible, but with only one target.
No, only if it was
target.
Untargeted.
Okay.
If it's untargeted and it's supposed to do some stuff, it'll try to do as much as possible. But if it's targeted and then suddenly all the targets are illegal,
right,
then it's completely countered.
Like, okay, if this says you may tap any number of target untapped vampire creatures you control, it would still resolve if they gave their guy Shroud.
So, all right, well then, good to know. Somebody tries to Urge to Feed your guy and you protect it, they can't still get the bonus.
Yeah.
So, and they only tap upon resolution, however, so you can't wait until they're already tapped to do something about it.
Yeah, but by then it's too late, right?
Huh?
What?
Tapping the vampires is not part of the cost. It's something
no,
you
it's
do.
Not, yeah. That's right. It's not part of the cost. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if they've tapped their guys, it's too late to counter it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Although if they're like, kill your guy, tap these guys, you should tell them to slow down.
So but if, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Next.
Crusher Zendikon.
Whoa.
Boom, boom, boom.
Paramore has a song on for Unrock Band that just popped into my head. Anyway.
Okay. Is it called Crusher Zendikon?
No, it's called Crush, Crush, Crush.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Quick question, really quick. Chewy, have you plugged in your Wii yet?
No.
Okay, then keep going.
Lex did send me a friend invite, though. Hmm. Anyway.
A magic card.
A magic card!
It costs a red and two. It's a common enchantment. It's an enchant land, just like the other Zendikons we have seen. Zendikoi, I think. Is that how you do the plural?
It makes it sound like you would get a Zendikoi pond.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Like a koi pond.
I'm trying to pluralize it if it was Greek, but I can't remember.
Zendikona.
Zendikona, maybe. Enchanted Land is a 4/2 red beast creature with trample. It's still a land. And then, of course, like in the Zendikoi-ish.
Zendikonorifica.
I would just say
in the enchanted land, it's thrown in the graveyard. Put it back in its owner's hands.
I like this one.
4/2 beast.
I think I like this one a little better than the green one.
Really?
Yeah. It can kill the green one, which is impressive for 3 mana, and it gives it trample. Plus, again, any of those in the console have haste.
I read that word out loud, but for some reason it didn't hit my brain.
The trample?
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
So chances, if you time it right, you should at least be able to hit for four once and then maybe a little bit of trample damage after that. Just beware of first strikers. But if you're playing red, you should really beware of first strikers because they'll usually kill your dudes.
Excuse me.
But, I mean, it's like the other Zendikons. I don't have a whole lot to say except I like this one so far. I think the blue one's still my favorite, but this one might be my second favorite.
Oh, Bill told me something today.
Did this involve flying about, quicksand?
Yes, it did. Okay. Flying quicksand.
Quicksand can't kill flying creatures.
Uh-huh. What?
What?
What? No. Animating the quicksand with the wind Zendikon. So you can fly and hit people and then kill something with the quicksand, and then, hey, you got a quicksand in your hands, and then you play it again. You're like, ah-ha-ha-ha-ha.
Well, people were... I've already heard talk of using the Zendikons to enchant your sack lands, to play a sack land, put a Zendikon on. Obviously, if you put a Zendikon on it, it's then summoning sick. But play a sack land, next turn play a Zendikon on it, sack it to go get the land, and then you get the sack land back, so you can keep fetching land.
And depending on how expensive or inexpensive the black one is, I think it'd make for a good backup plan for your Dark Depths.
Right.
Plan that.
But if you're talking about quicksand, you're obviously talking about a casual deck, because quicksand hasn't been... It was in core sets for a while.
It was time-shifted.
It was time-shifted.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Wasn't it?
I think Bill just liked the idea of flying quicksand.
I worry about that boy.
Anyway.
Although, since he is robbing the cradle, he gets mad points. Yeah, I gotta keep bringing that up. Okay, so who are we done with the Crusher Zendikon? I think it's awesome. The fact that it has trample.
Yes.
And, you know,
it is great.
To take it back to an even older song, it's just a little crush. Anyway, did anybody ever see the old Transformers cartoon?
No.
Oh.
Well, if I did, I don't really remember it. Sort of. Probably back in the day.
Well, in like the first episode when they crash land on Earth and they in the volcano and all that. And then later in the modern times there's an earthquake and this little it shakes something loose and the computer wakes up and this little probe pops out and he starts flying around and goes, "Explore. Explore." For some reason that's what I hear. I saw this and the Thingapod was "Explore. Explore." And then he repair, and he fixes all the transport. Anyway,
I just saw explore and I thought, oh hey, it's like exploration, but it's
just once,
one time,
yeah. Just once. So explore for one and a green. It's a sorcery. You may play an additional land this turn. Draw a card.
Yay.
Obviously, the comparison is Rampant Growth for the same cost. The only thing is Rampant Growth gets you a card out of the deck. This also gets you a random card out of the deck that may not be a land, but to really get the most out of it, you need to have a land in hand already. Whereas when you have a Rampant Growth and three lands, you really have four lands. When you have an Explore and three lands, you have three lands.
And a card.
And a card.
Yay, card.
Yay.
Obviously good for enabling those double landfalls. But I guess I could also see putting it in my green limited deck just to go an extra card deep if I, depending on what I've got. It's a common.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's just going to be nuts for landfall decks, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if absolutely nothing else, it just cycles at sorcery speed.
Right.
Yeah, I was about to say, any card that costs two and has draw a card attached to it, I mean, it can't be all that bad.
Yeah, it's always going to be like a, not an auto-include in like green draft or green sealed, but it'll be close.
And that's what I'm saying. It really depends on what else you got. That's pretty much all there is to that one.
Next. Who wants this crappy one? Should I take the crappy one, or Mikey wants a crappy one?
I'm sorry, I don't see a crappy one next to this one.
I'll go ahead and do it. It's not crappy, it's just kind of This is a little bit uninteresting.
It's insanely narrow.
Terra Eternal. Costs a white and two. It's a rare enchantment. All lands are indestructible. That's nice.
That makes your Zendikond indestructible.
Oh! Like that.
Yeah.
Makes your wake up lands indestructible. Shuts down pretty much the entire Magic Christmas land deck, the LD deck that's in standard right now.
Yeah, but that's not big enough to really matter. Is it?
I hadn't even heard about it.
Yes, if you, and also shuts down the Jund deck's Ruin Blasters out of the sideboard. Some are getting main deck.
There
now.
Is that.
Yeah. That's not your problem when you're running up against that deck. That's just another problem.
Well, let's look at it this way. The comparison is to kind of an older card.
Consecrate Land?
Thank you.
Which was also time-shifted.
No.
Yeah. Well, yes, because, yeah, kind of. But actually, I was
sacred
thinking...
Ground?
Sacred Ground. For one and a white, if a land would be put into your graveyard as a result of a spell or effect an opponent controls, it returns to play, correct? Something like that. This just keeps it in play the entire time, but the effect is symmetrical. All lands are indestructible.
Yeah, that could cause problems.
Yeah. Getting a couple copies of this might actually finally make my Ambush Commanders worthwhile, because I never play with Ambush Commanders because I don't like my lands to die. So... But yeah, I mean, it is narrow, but there are more applications to this than just protecting your mana sources.
I kind of wish I need to rework my man lands deck, apparently, because this really needs to go in there.
It really
does. But it's only red green.
But this card is not nearly as interesting, not even half as interesting as the next card.
Which one's the next card?
It's amazingly interesting.
These are both pretty good.
Yeah, but one of them is better than the other. Both are good.
Okay, well, I'll take the Everflowing Chalice then.
Okay.
That is not the one you were talking about, is it?
No, good, but good. This one's good too.
Well, I'll leave the other one for you then. Everflowing Chalice is a zero-cost uncommon artifact. It has multi-kicker of two colorless mana, and it enters the battlefield with a charge counter on it for each time it was kicked. And you tap it to add one colorless mana to your mana pool for each charge counter on Everflowing Chalice. So, well, for two mana, it gives you colorless mana. That kind of is all right, I guess. For four mana, it gives you two colorless mana. That's probably the sweet spot, I think.
That's where it becomes an Ur-Golem's Eye or a Sisse's Ring, which isn't great, but isn't terrible.
Yeah, and then for six, you get... three colors, mana, which is nuts, but...
Well, you've already got six.
Yeah.
More go from six to Dynamo. Nine.
Do what?
More costly than Thrawn Dynamo at that point.
Yeah. But the fact that it scales, if you just need one more mana next turn,
Yeah.
Something to do on turn two, it is acceleration if you pay two for it.
Now, the combo, so to speak, in standard is... of course, our good friend and Affinity's good friend, Ethereum Sculptor, because this will, in fact, that does reduce the cost, so therefore you could pay one to put in with a charge counter, or three to put in with two, et cetera, et cetera.
Which makes it pretty nuts.
The non-standard combo is using Energy Chamber, which is an artifact that costs two. At the beginning of your upkeep, you can choose one, either put a +1/+1 counter on an artifact creature, or put a charge counter on a non-creature artifact.
There's also a mirror that can do that, but I can't remember his name right now.
Core Tapper. How did I know that?
I don't know.
So you can use this to get lots of mana.
Which would be the whole point.
But you know what? Like Mike Flores said in his article when he talked about it, really, this is the only 2-cost artifact, colorless mana accelerant. It's the only sort of signet. And signets, in fact, you have to have a mana available to use them. So,
mm-hmm. But they also make colored mana, so it's cool.
That's true. But this is variable. So, yeah. I think it's interesting.
Just be sure at the pre-release when you play this, you say, "My cup runneth over," as you cast it. Especially if you kick it more than twice. If you kick it, you know, once, just you can play it as a cup. If you kick it twice, it's a full cup. If you kick it 3 times, you have to say, "My cup runneth over." It's a rule.
Is it half full, half empty?
It needs refilling. He's a drunk. All right, Brian, take this nifty one that you want to have babies with. Okay. I didn't say have sex with. Oh, crap.
I did.
It's in the Bible.
Amulet of Vigor.
And Brian and the Amulet of Vigor beget. No, never mind.
For 1 colorless mana. That's right, 1 colorless mana. It's an artifact. It's rare. Whenever a permanent enters the battlefield tapped and under your control, untap it.
This is crazy.
This is crazy. This completely removes the drawback of X enters the battlefield
untapped. Hundreds of cards.
There's so many we can think of. Slumbering Titan comes to mind.
The first thing that I thought of was the freaking the Ravnica Bounce Lands. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. Definitely.
That is completely insane.
Terramorphic Expanse suddenly becomes almost better than a sac land, except that the sac land can get non-basic lands, but it's still pretty good. All sorts of creatures, all sorts of other things.
Artifacts.
And we need to talk for a quick second here about the rules, and they talked about this in the article, but I want to make sure that it's covered correctly. Mike, mm-hmm. I want to make sure I understand this. If I have one of these out and a land I control enters the battlefield untapped already, like a forest, the trigger does not go on the stack, and therefore I cannot tap it in response and then untap it, correct?
Well, yeah, correct.
But now what happens is if I have 2 of these Amulets of Vigor out, and I play something like a Karoo land, both of the triggers go on the stack at once, and if I go ahead and resolve the first one and untap it, and then I tap it for mana, I can then untap it with the second trigger, correct?
Yes.
Yay!
Brian is so cute.
But they covered from the lab person covered that in their article, and I wanted to make sure that I understood it. But again, there's so many things you can do with this. Think of all the creatures that come into play tapped because they should, and now they won't, or all of the dual lands in this set that can turn into creatures that also happen to be dual lands that don't hurt you, or the tri-lands from Shards.
Wow.
All that good stuff. Or your Charcoal Diamond.
Or your Goober Face.
But yeah, so I think what it does is actually fairly straightforward, but the implications are just astounding.
Yeah, I think they previewed it in the From the Lab article to maybe try to hide it. I don't know, to maybe try to tone down all the alarm bells that it screams to trip. Someone a lot smarter than me is going to make a lot of money with this thing.
The last card I'm going to mention in this, Mike, you know it. Thawing Glaciers.
I think I just died and went to heaven.
I was going to say messed himself, and I was totally going to mean that sexually. Thank goodness I didn't get a chance to say it, though.
We are very much PG-13 these days, aren't we? And it was Noelle de Cordova I said the From the Lab guy.
Yeah.
And I like his article, so.
Since I haven't read the Magic site in, well, months and months, I just look at the visual spoiler and I go, huh. And I was just digging through this article and I saw Rupture Spire. That makes me happy. Secure Tri-Builder. That's completely ridiculous. Cloud Post. That's broken.
Yeah, the Cloud Post.
And the Orzhov Basilica is shown here as far as the Carews, and that makes me happy.
He does a good job also pointing out that at one mana, it's what we call a cog, and there's all these cards in Fifth Dawn that love cogs.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, we could spend a whole episode on Amulet of Vigor, but go out there and figure it out and tell us what you come up with. Let's keep going on this crazy treasure hunt for previews that we got going on here.
I don't want to take a treasure hunt. I'd rather go on a quest for Ulla's Temple today.
Treasure hunt, one in a blue. You're fired. Sorcery, common. Reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a non-land card. Then put all cards revealed this way into your hand.
This card has actually gotten some of the most hype that I've heard.
For one in a blue, it says, get an action card and maybe some other stuff too. Well, maybe some lands too.
Mm-hmm. For one in a blue, it says, if you're playing Cascade Swans, you win.
Ah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's actually pretty serious.
Not really. Cascade Swans kind of died a long time ago.
Not so much in Extended.
Yeah, there's lots better combos in Extended that are owning. Maybe not anymore with Treasure Hunt coming, but...
Or any deck that can support this and run, what is it? Reckless Assault? No.
Seismic Assault.
Monkeys.
You know, the little task of running Treasure Hunt and a thing that costs 3 red. No big deal.
If your deck is full of land, I mean, you're going to find something.
Yeah. I like it.
It's a good card.
Like Chewy said, you're always going to get an action card. And you might, if you even draw two off of this, that's decent for the cost. At sorcery speed, that's actually pretty good for the cost. And any more than two.
Any other sorcery like this.
Mm-hmm. And any more than that, and it's just crazy.
So, Mike, you didn't want to go on a treasure hunt. You wanted to do what?
I wanted to go on a quest for Ulla's Temple.
And what?
Because,
pray tell. That's because what?
It's because he's crazy. This quest is only for the insane and deluded.
Well, it does have a vaguely Lovecraftian feel to it.
It does.
What, pray tell? This sounds like... how do you pronounce it? Relie?
Something like that.
Where Cthulhu is taking his nappy time.
Yes.
Yes. So you're out to just piss him off and wake him up, aren't you? Aren't you? Admit it!
The stars are right.
Yes. Well, right. Just real quick, it takes quite a bit of work, I think, in order to make the stars right for this to actually do anything for you.
It takes hardly any work at all.
What?
Are you kidding?
Cost one blue, the quest for Ulla's Temple, a rare enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may look at the top card of your library. If it's a creature card, you may reveal it and put a quest counter on quest for Ulla's Temple. Not difficult.
No.
At the beginning of each end step, which means the same turn to get the last counter, you can use it. At the beginning of each end step, oh my god.
Yeah, that's a bit much.
If there are three or more quest counters on quest for Ulla's Temple, you may put a Kraken, Leviathan, Octopus, or Serpent creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. And you must laugh maniacally.
Okay, one.
And the quest doesn't sack itself. Repeating effect. What were you going to say?
I'm going to sack yourself in a minute. The reason I say this takes a lot of work is because if you're playing the type of blue deck... Hang on a minute. Let me get the... Nico, don't f*** up my... Oh! Right down the
time.
Right down the time.
That you do have to take out.
That was about 33-10.
remember to do it this time.
Yeah.
Okay, now, Nico, get out of there. Thank you. Sorry, cat's all up in my eyes trying to look out the window. There's nothing out the window. There's only dead people out the window trying to eat your brains. Now, what was I just saying? Oh, if you're playing the type of blue deck that wants to throw out a giant finisher like that, well then, chances are you have lots of, you know, draw go, counters, card draw.
What do you mean giant finisher? Start the game with these things. Don't finish, start it.
But
we'll start and finish.
But where are you, chances are you don't have that many creatures in your deck.
Are you kidding?
You fill it full of Kraken, Leviathans, Octopoids, and
okay, so if this gives you the great excuse to run a deck full of crazy expensive stuff and nothing else.
So you fill your deck full of crazy expensive stuff that you can never cast naturally, and then someone kills your enchantment, and then you just lose.
Counter all the
think of what will happen if you win.
If they, yeah.
This is not a card to be serious with. This is a card to go and do something silly with. And if you win, songs will be sung in your honor.
That is true. Yeah. I will give you that and like it. I'm just
the dream is throwing down something like Lorthos the Tidemaker. Although you still need 8 mana to get its ability. It's still a huge.
Yeah,
huge.
But that doesn't. Yeah, but who? Somebody said. Was it Bill said that on the forums? He's like, well, don't use Lorthos because you still need 8 mana. I'm like, he's an 8/8. Who cares?
Maybe you should attack
him. He's a big stupid, big stupid. Like, oh, I've only got 4 mana. Oh, well, I'll just hit you for 8 on turn 4.
So I mean, not only that, this, but we have the Inkwell Leviathan, we have the Ketterek Leviathan.
Tidal Kraken.
The Tidal Kraken. Is Tidal Kraken in Standard?
No.
I'm not talking about Standard.
No. But just in general, if we open it up, we've got all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah, if we open it up, we've got Marjan, Polar Kraken, the original Leviathan. I still have one of those.
Yokel Mortar.
Yes, the Yokel Mortar. Well, the Yokel Mortar is weird.
Yeah, you still have.
You got to sacrifice 5 lands when he comes into play.
Yeah.
Well, who's the one where you skip turns?
Because
it's a Leviathan.
Eater of Days.
Question, is the...
It costs 4. You don't really need to cheat him out.
Is the Simic Sky Swallower Leviathan?
It is. Yeah. Oh,
okay. So is the Sky Swallower, but no one ever plays him.
No, don't play Sky Swallower, especially not with this deck.
No.
And actually, the Serpents are all pretty decent sized. At the low end of your curve, if you actually want to play something, you've got Giant Octopus, which is a freaking hill giant, and your Kraken Hatchling.
Kraken Hatchling, yeah.
Yes.
And if we open this up past Standard, you've got all the changelings that happen to be
holy crap,
Kraken, Leviathans, Octopuses, and Serpents.
Ooh, and the Mistborn Ultimus. Oh yeah.
Well, there you go. Make that deck. Make a changeling.
I think
deck.
I just did.
Yeah.
You can run a quest for Ula's Temple deck that also runs Crucible of Fire.
I was just about to say that.
A blue-red Kraken Dragon deck.
Kraken, the Sky Kraken!
Yes!
We
could spend a whole episode talking about goofy ideas for this card, too.
Yeah, okay. So,
but let's.
I first read
let's not do that.
Before I went to work one day, I was like, Word Cloud? And I read it, and I was talking to myself the rest of the day. And when I went to my first break, Wolfgang Winter popped up on Gmail and said, dude, did you see the quest for Ula's Temple? And we spent my entire break discussing big creatures and blue creatures and how it was really freaking weird. It's nice. Anyway.
Yay, big blue creature.
Yes, yay, big blue creatures.
Well, segue much?
The Goliath Sphinx. Get a hold of this for 7, 5 and 2 blue. It's a rare. It's a Sphinx creature. It has flying, and it's an 8/7. It has no other abilities. Doesn't need other abilities. Would it like Shroud? Sure. But
so would I.
It's one more mana. One more mana than poor Mahamoodi Jin. which at 6 at a 5-6 flyer is a wrecking ball in limited, just an absolute wrecking ball. And this thing is like, oh, you think you're really big. You're not big. 8-7. I don't.
This is not a Sphinx. This is a dragon that they accidentally printed in blue.
This is a finisher right here.
Well, duh. Yeah. It's too bad it's not an octopus.
But then it wouldn't have flying. It would, unless it was a flying octopus. Man, I really want to say something here, but I'm trying not to.
Are you about to be dirty? That's
no,
my job.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I just, well, okay. Quick note. So Final Fantasy The After Years, all of the chapters have been out for months now, since September. So I don't think this is really a spoiler.
I haven't played it yet.
Should I stop talking now?
Is this some sort of major spoiler about something?
It's very close to the end of the game.
Is it a plot point?
It's kind of a plot point, but it's kind of a weird sort of. I don't think it affects how you really play the game.
Does this involve Ultros?
I don't know what you're talking about. What?
Never mind.
Does this involve wasting any more time than we already have?
No. It's an 8-7 with flying. It's huge. It's a Goliath. That's why it is. The picture is pretty nice. He really does look like. He's wiping you off of his foot.
Yeah. He's like, I smashed a planeswalker.
So, but, I mean, yeah, I don't know what else you need to say. So, next.
Next. Whose turn is it?
It's yours.
I don't even know.
It's Chewy.
Is it mine? Okay, I guess I'll do it.
Yeah, time. Mike did the quest.
I did the treasure, huh? It doesn't matter. Avenger of Zendikar. It's Captain America. I mean, Captain Zendikar. Whoa.
By my powers combined.
Planet. Lord have mercy. For 5 and 2 green, he is an elemental and mythic. 5 and 2 green, 7 mana. 5/5. When Avenger of Zendikar enters the battlefield, put a 0/1 green plant creature token onto the battlefield for each land you control. And landfall. This is crazy. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may put a +1/+1 counter on each plant creature you control. Note, not each plant token, each plant creature. I read it twice before I saw that.
But this is for all the people that have always wanted to put +1/+1 counters on their tokens.
Corey. Corey would love this.
This, I mean, just to gum up the ground by itself with all those guys, you could be about to lose, and you play this guy, and all of a sudden they're not getting through ever again. And then the pumping is just great. But this reminds me of, actually, the playing card that gets you goats.
Yeah, you're right.
Goats are funny.
It's mythic, it's big, it smashes, it costs 7. It's an elemental.
It really loves explore.
And there's other plants, so.
Utopia Tree will fear no man.
Utopia Tree fears every man.
I'm actually kind of, I'm not really afraid of Utopia Tree, but it does kind of give me the willies. The giblets. Come on, get in the boat, fish. Okay. Next. Wait, are we done with the Avenger?
I mean, it's so good. It's a mythic. It's good. I just, you know, I don't know what else you need to say about it.
Yes, play Harrow with Avenger of Zendikar.
30 cards that mention the word plant.
Avenger of Zendikar does.
Photo Hydra.
Phyto Hydra.
No, I'm saying 30 cards that mention the word plant. I just looked them up.
That's special.
Independently later.
Alrighty then.
I like this Myers Toll. I like this card. Costs one black. Is a sorcery. It is common. Target player reveals a number of cards from his or her hand equal to the number of swamps you control. You choose one of them. That player discards that card. I like it.
What's the one for one black? Target opponent reveals three cards in their hand. You choose one.
Blackmail.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this has the potential to be, at worst, it's target opponent discards a card for one black, which, you know, is, it's pretty low level. And then immediately, on at least on turn two in a mono black deck, but after a while at least, it gets a little better.
Yes.
That's it, really.
It's like, it's Mind Sledge's little, stupid little cousin.
I could see this very easily. You know, there could be a Quest for the Nihilstone deck out there that uses this and Mind Rot effects and Mind Sludge, because Mind Sludge is in Zendikar, and that's that is a powerful effect. So
next,
all right, Terastodon.
This really, I couldn't tell if this sounded dirty or if it sounded like somebody trying to make up a smart sounding word. Okay,
yeah, I don't know.
It's got to be one of those two. I just can't put my finger on it.
Well, it's still the Terastodon. Pterodactyl. It costs 6 and 2 green, and it's a 9/9. I mean, it costs 8, so it's a green creature. What do you expect? It's an elephant. Yay, elephant. And it's a rare. Now, when Terastodon enters the battlefield, you may destroy up to 3 target non-creature permanents, and sometimes you very well might want to choose none and just get your 9/9. For each permanent put into a graveyard this way, its controller puts a 3/3 green elephant creature token onto the battlefield. Not necessarily the owner of Terastodon, but the owner of the permanent. So if you go, hey, I nuked 3 of your lands, good for you. They've got three elephants now, which may be fine by you, but sometimes you might want to go ahead and lay down an Everflowing Chalice for nothing and turn it into a beast.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time this guy says when you play him, sacrifice 3 lands and murder your opponents later.
Right. If you got the 3 lands to sack, which for 8 mana, you should. You really should. Unless you're doing something tricky like conspiracy to turn them into a kraken so you can throw them out early with a quest. But that would be insane.
Sky kraken. Elephant kraken.
I like it. I like the art. He's going, rah! But in an elephant voice.
Yeah, he looks like somebody off the card to the right said, well, look at the big elephants. Too bad he's afraid of mice. He's like, who's afraid of mice? Yeah. I like that this can blow up, I don't know, Journey to Nowhere. Get a dude back. It can blow up planeswalkers.
It can.
Mm-hmm.
Turns the planeswalker into an elephant.
Sword Markov is like, I want to suck your... Okay. That was going to be blood, by the way. Suck your blood.
Here's a feather. It's really interesting, in my opinion, that green is the color that's best able to deal with planeswalkers. I get it. I get why it happens mechanically, but flavor wise, I'm like, sure, okay.
It was kind of a go away, stop messing with us kind of thing.
You're a funny guy. Go away.
Well, it's true. Green's all about the natural order of things, and planeswalkers are not necessarily natural.
They're pretty far from it, actually.
Sometimes they belong to PETA.
What?
Something.
Right, next.
Next.
Never funny.
Blowing up enchantments and artifacts. This is the best case scenario mentality that the guys on Limited Resources talk about. But something about blowing up a land and a trusty machete and a journey to nowhere on your opponent's side. That just makes me feel happy. Sure, they get 9 power worth of guys, but if it's your land, then really they didn't.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is that you have to be, before you get too concerned with blowing up the opponent's stuff. Mike's idea of sack some lands and get 18 worth of power, I like that a lot.
So. That's pretty nuts. Murder.
Especially if they go, if they play a Terastodon and they go blow up your lands, I'm like, all right. In response, I'll tap these two for mana and then Doomblade. Thanks for the guy. Now go away.
Right then.
Right.
Ruin Ghost. This is not my turn.
Yes, it is. Mike did the Myers Toll.
Okay, Ruin Ghost for 1 and a white. It's a spirit, uncommon, 1/1. White and tap. Exile target land you control. Then return it to the battlefield under your control. You get to blink land. This is completely nuts in this block.
Did you say that this guy was uncommon? I didn't catch if he did.
Possibly. He is
uncommon. He's uncommon. Yeah.
Hey.
Just let you landfall at will.
Yeah.
And if you've got like a Kabira Crossroads, oh, even better.
Yeah.
And if you've got a Kabira Crossroads and an Amulet of Vigor, then that's just silly. Let's never mind.
this is so great because it protects your lands. Somebody's like, Stone Rain, and you're like, no. Or you get double landfall. All sorts of stuff.
Step Lynx totally has a boner for this guy. Because Step Lynx is a real good card.
Yeah.
And this, it's nuts.
Think about any sort of evasion creature and the already good Teetering Peaks.
Ah!
Oh, man.
That's just not fair.
Teetering Peaks is good enough as a spell on its own, yeah. Pretty much.
It really is.
I like the blue one. No, I really don't.
Good card.
What?
I said good card. This is a good card.
This is a very good card.
This is a very good card.
I got nothing else.
Again, it's rather straightforward in its application. And it doesn't require that card to come in tapped unless the card itself does, which is good.
Oh, that is a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
It took me a minute. I was like, no. Oh, there's no extra clause. Gotcha. There is, however, a sanity clause.
Just don't do it to your creature with a Zendikon on it, because the Zendikon will fall off and not come back. The Zendikons don't come back anyway, but it just seems like kind of a waste. Don't do it.
Next.
Wait a minute.
What?
Huh. Do most blink things, say, put it back under its owner's control?
Huh.
Oh, wow.
They usually do. Wow, so if I steal somebody's land with Annex, and then
the
I
Annex will fall off. But, you steal somebody's land some other way.
But I return it to the battlefield under my control.
Oh, you do, even though the Annex falls off.
Yeah, I'll turn that Annex into a permanent. I'm redrawing the map here. I'm rezoning.
Other temporary effects will lose track of it too. Ones that don't depend on cards.
Yeah, like wow. Give me that until end of turn.
Uh huh.
Won't matter.
Who's that? Herald of Leshrac? Whose community will keep fuel in? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's nifty. All right. Next.
You lose and you want to give it back. That's awesome. Okay, Gnarled Pack.
That's not awesome.
It's okay.
We got lots of green cards. It's just too bad that Dirk's not here.
Yeah. I miss Dirk.
It costs a green and 1. It's a 2/2. Yay, bear. It's a common. It's a beast.
It's a beast. I missed that it was a beast.
Yeah.
That's one important. Of the cheapest beasts ever.
Yeah, you're right. It costs a its multi-kicker costs a green a one. So it's part – I think there's a cycle here. Gnarled Pack enters the battlefield with a plus one counter on it for each time it was kicked.
Right. So basically you can get a bear or you can get a hill giant or at six you can get a 4/4, which, again, in limited, that might well be the biggest creature on the board for the rest of the game. So
yeah.
I believe you're right. We've seen Skitter of Lizards, which is the 1/1 with haste and red.
Mm-hmm.
Have we not seen another?
Yeah, there's a blue one later.
There's a blue one later.
Yeah, without one.
We haven't gotten there yet. So yeah, it's clearly a cycle at common. I like it because it's on the one hand, it gives you a lot of versatility. On the other hand, it's almost skill testing where, you know, it's all, a lot of times the best play will be play
a 2/2 for two. Bear. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Kind of like the old Kavu Titan.
It's interesting, though, with the cards with multi-kicker, I don't feel like they create as much of a compulsion to hold on to it until you can pay a kicker.
Mm-hmm.
With multi-kicker gives more of a feeling of, okay, just dump whatever you have into this.
Right. Well, there will sometimes be that tension of, I'm at five, and I draw this card, and I've got a decent board presence. Do I go ahead and play it, or do I hold off for try and get one more mana? So. But I agree, most of the time you're just going to go and do it.
Hmm. Okay.
All right, well, last time we covered a card that was actually the pre-release card, Comet Storm, which was a mythic rare and, you know, did X damage and cost two red and had a multi-kicker of one colorless. Well, here we have the green version, except it's a regular rare. But it's less likely to kill somebody outright, but it just might. Strength of the... Mike?
Tajuru.
Tajuru. Okay, strength of the Tajuru costs an X and two green and is an instant. Yes, an instant, and it's a rare. It's a multi-kicker of one colorless. Choose target creature. Then choose another target creature for each time strength of the Tajuru was kicked. Put X +1/+1 counters on each of them. The first time I read this card, I glanced over and I thought it was +X/+X until end of turn. It's not. It's counters.
Yes, yeah, it's pretty nice.
It's an instant.
Yeah, that's...
the burn spell is arguably better because it doesn't require anything else. It just requires mana and then something to burn. This, you have to have a creature or more than one creature. But the effect could be huge. Say you got 5 mana and you got 2 dudes. You attack with your 2 dudes... Well, you can put 2 +1/+1 counters on each of those. That's a, especially with the size of the creatures that have been in Zendikar and that we're seeing in World Wake, that's a sizable difference, and it's permanent. Mm-hmm. And that's at 5 mana. Any higher, if you want to dump 3 counters on one creature, that's fine, or more with more mana, go nuts. Yay, strength. I was thrown off by the fact that it's almost identical to the burn spell and that this is a full rarity lower, but it makes a lot of sense to me because you can never go with an empty board. Oh, yes, I top deck this, you lose. Okay. Chewy, anything to say about it?
I think No, you guys covered it. I love the fact that dude in the art is just snatching a Hedron. And just walking off with it. He's like, this is mine! Either he's about
he looks
to swing
like he's
going to
bring it down on somebody.
He might
yeah.
be using it as a weapon.
Yeah.
And
you can see...
You look in the background, there's like a random Drake and a random big lion thing fighting, and that's not even part of the deal. It's just like, roar! Like, okay.
I get the sense that the big lion thing also has received the benefit of the strength of the Tajaru, that he might be an ally or something.
That's a pretty big lion.
Yeah.
That is a pretty big lion.
Okay. Next, Chewie. This one's good.
Is it me again?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're just moving through here.
Nifty.
Should we look elsewhere for a moment?
No. For okay. 3 and 3 red, 6 mana, we have a 5/5 flying rare dragon with sort of fire breathing. It's fire breathing costs 1 and a red instead of just a red for +1/+0 until end of turn. That's kind of weird. And whenever Mordant, it's called Mordant Dragon, I didn't actually say that. Whenever Mordant Dragon deals combat damage to a player, hey, it's Morty, you may have it deal that much damage to target creature that player controls. That's why it costs 1 and a red for fire breathing. Now, in this picture, he actually is burninating the countryside and the thatched roof cottages.
Yes, he is.
Looks pretty good there. Big arm coming out the back of his head. But,
Majesty, I said Majesty. This guy wouldn't know Majesty if it came up and bit him in the face.
Consummate beast. So, anyway, enough with a strong bet. This guy is, I don't know, he seems kind of overkill. I'll smash your face, and I'll kill one of your guys while I'm at it. Eh.
What this guy does is kind of like what Ashling the Extinguisher does, which is you're going to lose your guy, your best guy, so you might as well go ahead and block. But this is where the fire breathing is so important, is that he can kill things that have a toughness greater than 5, and unlike some of the green effects that, you know, I punch you, you punch me, he doesn't get hurt. And he's not redirecting the damage from the player.
What I'm seeing is that he gives you an out for not having to worry about as much about the retaliation for your attack.
Oh, Lord, there's a cat war going on all of a sudden. Sorry, I thought
well,
they
you
were
can't hear it, so it's
I okay. thought they were being sweet and nuzzling. No, they were not.
But that's a good point.
That is a very good point.
I can go and swing, and the guy that's going to be coming at me is now dead. And it doesn't even matter if he was unblockable or whatever. He's dead. Dead.
Hmm?
And again, oh, by the way, you're taking 5.
At least.
Not you, the other guy. Yeah. I like it. It's a little more mana-intensive
right, you
than the health.
Not you guys. You guys keep talking.
It's a little more man-intensive than the Hellkite Charger, and it doesn't have haste. But, you know, how many times have you really untapped with a Hellkite Charger and been able to do the whole Relentless Assault thing? If you have, great. But, you know, I just like that it's a 5/5 with haste. This thing can go toe-to-toe with it and actually has a more relevant ability if it gets through. So, and that's all I've got to say is about that.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yay, hooray.
Hooray!
Yay!
Yay! Next!
Next. I'm going to take the Creeping Tar Pit next.
Okay.
It's another man land. It's rare.
We've seen, with this one, we've seen 4 out of 5.
Somebody just died.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're right. We haven't seen a green-white one yet.
Correct.
This is the blue-black one. Creeping Tar Pit enters the battlefield tapped. Tap it for a blue or a black. Pay 1, a blue and a black. Is that the cheapest one so far?
I don't know.
Might be.
Until
end of turn, Creeping Tar Pit becomes a 3/2 blue and black elemental creature and is unblockable. It's still a land.
No, the Lava Claw Reaches was 1, a black, and a red.
Okay.
But you wanted to do it with more mana.
Sure.
Pump it up. So it's at least tied. So I like this.
So essentially 4 mana, target creature become, or target player loses 3 life.
Yeah. That's a good spell.
Will you two quit trying to kill each other under my bed? Oh, my God. Okay, sorry.
And it also can tap for a blue or black.
Yay, you guys talk.
Yay.
I have to go murder some cats.
So, yeah. I mean, it's really good in a control deck because those are two of the main control colors. Mm-hmm. And it's unblockable, so you can play all the defenders you want. That's fine. I don't care. Still going to hit you for three.
Yeah. It's so straightforward, there's not really much to say.
No. We've been trying to go at a good clip here, and I think we've been succeeding. That doesn't mean that we're not interested in these cards. Far from it. It's just that a lot of these are fairly straightforward. And others, would like the Amulet or the Quest, we could go on about forever and ever and never be done. So, or like the next card, I think. Well, not quite.
What'd I miss? Were we issuing a disclaimer? We hate all these cards. If we don't talk about them for more than like 20 minutes, that means we don't like them.
That's exactly what I was saying.
That's what I thought.
Have you prevented the turf war?
No, but Scott was on the phone. But when I said, stop it, he, which you guys might have heard, he came out and started shush, and shooing one cat away from each other. So I came back in here to record.
Okay. And were we done with the tar pit, Mike?
As far as I can tell.
Okay.
Pay some mana, get an unblockable dude. Yay, awesome.
So now we got a shapeshifter. This is a clone, and it's the cheapest clone ever. Jawari shapeshifter. Costs one and a blue, and it's a 0/0. It's a rare. It says shapeshifter ally. You may have Jawari shapeshifter enter the battlefield as a copy of any ally creature on the battlefield. Note, it doesn't have to be an ally you control.
Mm-hmm. I want a Stonework Puma.
I want a Kazul Warlord.
You're a jerk.
Mistform Ultima.
You're an idiot.
Yes. Again, this guy could go in your Changeling deck.
Shell Changeling.
But really, I mean, because of the wording here, it will trigger enters the battlefield effects of all of your other allies, plus its own, whatever those might be. This is another one that just begs to go crazy. The fact that usually one of any particular ally, as long as that ally has a general effect, is usually enough. But to then have two of it really goes insane. Think of all the rare ones. The red one. Those +1/+1 counters are gonna go crazy. The green one, you're gonna have more wolves than you can shake a stick at.
All sorts of If you have one ally in play, someone's killed all the rest, and it's a Hagra Diabolist, and you play a Jawari Shapeshifter, you can make them lose 4 life.
For 2 mana.
For 2 mana.
And each one's a what, 3-3?
3-3?
3-3 is, I'm pretty sure Diabolist is a 3-3.
So, not bad. For 2 mana, not bad. You just have to work to make sure you got an ally to copy.
Yeah, which, if you're playing, it is a 3-2. If you're playing, if you're playing a deck with allies in it, then that shouldn't be a problem.
Right. I like it.
Yep.
Mirasa Pyromancer. Pick off 2 guys. Hey, alright. Ooh, Halimar Excavator. Mill lots of cards.
That's true. That's
Yay,
true.
I'm working the new cards into the preview episodes. Next.
Next. We'll go ahead.
Oh, this is me. Quag Vampires. Giggity, giggity. For a single black, they're common. They're a 1/1 vampire rogue. Uh-oh, rogue. You can totally do some... I forgot what it's called already. Prowl.
It's true.
So, they are 1/1 with Swamp Walk for a single black. It has a multi-kicker of 1 and a black, and they enter the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter for each time it was kicked.
Right. This is the black one of that cycle.
Yeah. It's same as the others, just with Swamp Walk.
So each of them has some sort of ability, except the green one's a little bigger.
Yeah.
Did we see them all now? Once we see the blue one?
Well, we've seen the red one. We haven't seen the white one.
Ah, okay.
Really? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
Seems pretty straightforward. What I love is, again, in Limited, the fact that you can go ahead and play this guy as a dork, but if you see that they're playing swamps, you can ratchet this guy up a little bit later and really hit home. Because they're probably not going to like taking one a turn from the beginning, but they're really not going to take taking three a turn later that they can't stop or that they have to kill.
Hmm. All right.
And now you know the rest of the story.
You look just like Paul Harvey.
Why, thank you.
Giggity. Next!
Ricochet Trap. Costs a red and three. It's an instant. It's uncommon. And it's a trap. If an opponent casts a blue spell this turn, you may pay red rather than pay Ricochet Trap's mana cost. Change the target of target spell with a single target.
Target.
I love this, actually. I really do.
Target the target of target.
I mean, four is a little expensive for it when you can swerve for a blue and a red. But hey, I like this.
Yeah.
I love the flavor text, too.
Me too. That was something I was actually going to bring up. In his last seconds, Remhas regretted using his most powerful spell.
I hate it when that happens. So, if the Tim's a Tim, can the Tim the Timming Tim? Okay, I'm sorry.
This only changes the target of target spell, not spell or ability.
Yeah.
I was more going off of the targets.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Tim's, like, pinging.
I was, but not in reference to the card. More like in reference to the bad joke that Mike was making, so I took it and ran with it.
And then you realized no one was chasing you, so you did one of those, you know, kind of slow down things. Kind of slow to a walk and look behind you and like, where the hell?
And then I got tackled from the side like an idiot. Next!
Raptors do that. Pilgrim's Eye. Cost three.
I am not doing spell contortion, just for the record.
Okay.
Keep going.
Man.
All right, I'll do spell contortion.
Okay, do Pilgrim's Eye too.
Okay. Pilgrim's Eye costs three colorless. It's an artifact creature. It's a Thopter.
Yes!
And it's a common, and it's 1/1. It's flying. Now listen to this. When Pilgrim's Eye enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. This is a... is it Borderland Ranger? Was that the Civic Wayfinder?
Civic Wayfinder.
Yeah, Borderland Ranger, same thing.
But instead of being green, it's any color. Instead of being a 2/2 on the ground, it's a 1/1 with flying. I will take those changes.
Oh, yeah, and love it.
And love it, because here's a hint. Unless your deck is the most ridiculous thing ever, this should be in your sealed deck.
Mono blue acceleration, baby.
I will take it every day of the week. It gets you a land out of your deck. And if Zendikar Limited has taught me anything, it's lands, baby. Yeah. All right, so, but it's pretty straightforward. I like the fact that it's still got some utility that you can play it, and then, you know, it's in the air, so you can go ahead and either block a flying dude like a Windrider Eel, or you can suit up with some equipment and go hunting. This guy likes the adventurer's gear because he knows he's going to hit that landfall. But hey, there we go.
I like that he can kill a Wilkin turn and just not even care. He's like, ah, ha, ha, dead.
And you're up a card. So now let's move on to spell contortion.
Okay, wait a minute. Was there something else I was going to say about the Pilgrim's Eye? Mike, were you humming music when he was doing that?
No, I was just making a...
Oh, okay, Thopter sound. Gotcha.
Totally go in your Thopter deck.
Who's got a Thopter deck?
Nobody.
Somebody out there has a Thopter deck, and you just offended them.
All right, now let's really move on to spell contortion.
This card sucks. Can we skip it?
No, we can't.
This card doesn't suck. Can we skip it?
It costs two and a blue. That's three, Chewy. It's an instant. It's an uncommon. It has multi-kicker of one and a blue. Now, counter target spell unless its controller pays two colors. Draw a card for each time spell contortion was kicked. I know somebody out there, no offense to this person, I'm very much afraid that it's going to be me and I'm going to misread this card later, is going to think that you have to pay an additional two for every time it's kicked. No, you only have to pay an additional two to not get your spell countered. Where this card obviously gets interesting is when you're paying three and two blue for it, basically for a slightly more expensive Forbid. Forbid? Uh-huh. What? Forbid is the
what
wrong
are you
one.
Talking about?
Forbid
are
is
you
the
just
wrong.
Trying to say dismiss?
There it is.
Dismiss. Dismiss
Except
costs
dismiss
two.
Dismiss actually counters the spell.
Dismiss actually counters the spell and costs four, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. This costs five and may not counter the spell.
This card sucks.
The nice thing is that even if you draw it late and you don't have a whole lot else to do, you can always go ahead and say, counter your spell, and either they won't have the mana for it, or they might, and you get to draw one, two, couple cards, and it replaces itself.
This card sucks.
You're going to need to stop it, too, because that's seven mana.
I think I will stop it, too. But it at five, at least, it replaces itself.
Sucks.
Constructed-wise, I don't think it's there. But you must realize, generally speaking, in Limited, you play spells, especially your more expensive ones, when you can afford them. Most of the time, unless you have really good reason, you don't draw your fifth land and then say, you know, I could play my Anawan the Ruin Sage, which is totally going to win me this game, but I think I'll hold off until I've got two more colorless mana. So a lot of times that might be a hard counter that can also draw you a card. It may
suck. In the
suck.
Situation you're talking about there, while they're curving out, you're sitting there like a dope waiting to play this thing.
Unless you played something on turn four and you're sitting pretty. And I realize it's highly situational. There's going to be times where you're going to hold this and you're going to be like, I really need a spell rather than this stupid thing. And there's going to be some times where you're already set up and this is great. Again, I just like the fact that it can replace itself. I don't think it's great, and I'm not generally, unless it's a strong counterspell, I'm not a fan of counterspells in Limited because they're situationally you have to have them at the right time. But I don't think it's awful. I just think it's not very good.
Yeah, it's the thing that bugs me about it the most is actually in comparison to all the other multi-kick cards we've seen. For all the other ones we've seen, each one of them, at least one of their possible variable costs, they're at least as good as some other existing card that's already regarded to be pretty good. This one, at every one of its possible costs, is worse than any other card that does a similar thing.
That's true. But you know how cautious they've been about counterspells. So I'd rather they...
I think they erred on the side of caution for this one.
And you know what? I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I'm not hyping this card so much as the fact that I'm just trying to analyze it. Yeah. I am generally not a big counterspell person, so I am fine. If this is the gold standard, that's okay with me. This guy is not the gold standard. But I'd much rather see this card than another Cryptic Command reprint. So there you go. All right, I've done my duty and covered those two cards, so someone else needs to talk.
This card sucks.
Which one?
The spells suck.
You may not like the card, and that's fine, but you have to like the art once you realize what's going on.
Yeah, that is pretty awesome.
The art is great.
It's the pretzel hands going on there. I like it.
And the look on his face is like,
Yeah. Okay, next.
Next. A Blood Husk Ritualist. I like this card.
This card, as compared to the Spell Contortion, is actually pretty good. I like it.
Costs a black and two. It's a creature. It's a vampire shaman. It's uncommon. It's a 2/2. It starts out as a gray ogre person. It has a multi-kicker of one black. And then when Blood Husk Ritualist enters the battlefield, target opponent discards a card for each time it was kicked.
Yeah, this is pretty cool.
Yeah. If you like Mind Shatter, which, granted, is better than this card because it's random and because it costs less to get more. But still, if you like that sort of effect, this guy is good in your mono-black deck.
Or in the mono-black deck, if you'd rather play more creatures instead of Mind Sludge. This does a very similar thing.
Right. Play it out early. Get a dude. Play it out later. Knock some cards out. Or play it out early. Kill something with it. And then get it back with something like a Grim Discovery. And go, ah, ha, ha, ha. Because this is a potentially huge effect.
Oh, yeah.
To just go, hey, knock out the last three cards in your hand. Good thing it's an uncommon.
The art makes me thirsty.
Me too.
I got nothing else. It's pretty standard.
Yes.
Speaking of got nothing else, Arbor Elf. Single green mana. Elf Druid. 1/1. Common. Tap it to untap target forest. Next.
It's like a Llanowar Elf. But
sort of, yeah.
A little worse if you play it off of something like a Llanowar Reborn and don't have a forest. A little on par if all you ever do is use it like a Llanowar Elf, and better if you can enchant the land with something silly, like an Overgrowth or a Fertile Ground.
Or both.
Or if you've got those handy-dandy lands that Chewie's got. That have more than one land type.
Huh? Oh, the Ravnica Duels. Okay, yeah.
Shock land.
But like, if you play it off of a Raging Ravine, then you're like, aw.
Yeah.
I'll
untap my guy. He's not a forest crap.
However, if you put a Zendikon on your forest, you can use this guy to give it pseudo-vigilance.
Yes.
Next. Boring, but Mike, nifty.
You guys each take another one, and then I will re-enter the fray.
Fray?
Colony Garden. It's a land. It's common. Colony Garden enters the battlefield tapped. When Colony Garden enters the battlefield, put a 0/1 green plant creature token onto the battlefield. Battlefield. Tap, add a green to your mana pool.
Not a forest.
I saw this card actually before I saw the Avenger, because they both went up on Friday, but this one was on the Magic Show, and I watched the Magic Show, and I was like, you know, that's pretty good. He got some heat because he was comparing this card to Secure a Tribe Elder. What he was trying to say was Secure a Tribe Elder gives you a guy, and then you can go get a land. And this is a land that gets you a guy. But a lot of people are like, oh man, you so got it wrong, because, you know, that has power and it's completely different. It thins your deck and da da da, and actually accelerates your mana. And I, poor Evan Irwin, he was just trying to say, this gets you a guy and a land. And in fact, it can even buy you a turn. You play it, you know, and then they play their turn one goblin guide, which I've been hit by so many times now, and you blank an attack. That's pretty nice. I don't know if it's crazy good, but I think it's decent. And then you start, you know, building a plant deck, and it gets even sillier.
Living Tsunami. And Zendikar Avenger. Hey, dummy.
What's the Living Tsunami?
a 4/4 for 4 that bounces the land during your upkeep, or you sacrifice it.
That's right. That's right. There you go. Get a goat every turn.
Yay, goat. Yeah, I got nothing. I surrender.
Well, here, tell us about a new card.
Yay, new card. Marshall's Anthem. Oh, Lord. Marshall over at Limited Resources is going to love this. Marshall's Anthem for 2 and 2 white. It's an enchantment. It's a rare. Creatures you control will get +1/+1. It has a multi-kicker of 1 and a white. When Marshall's Anthem enters the battlefield, return up to X target creature cards from your graveyard to the battlefield, where X is the number of times Marshall's Anthem was kicked. Holy God, you can get back Iona.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Well, of course, it costs 6 mana to get back Iona, but it's still cheaper than the 9 it costs to player.
And
what were they thinking?
And she's bigger.
It's Glorious Anthem. So you can either play this out as a more expensive Glorious Anthem, which is fine, and pump your guys if that's what you want. Or you hold it in hand, play out your dudes, let them die at a mass removal, go, okay, whatever, and then play it when you can get 1 or 2 back. Probably 1 because that's 6 mana. But, you know, if you really want to get back 2 very decent guys toward the end that are going to be bigger – yeah. You killed my Baneslayer Angel. Well, screw you. I spent $70 on this card. I'm going to get it back.
But not at cardshark.com.
No.
Was this an invitational card or something? Because this art looks an awful lot like a real person.
It was not an invitational card to my knowledge. I just think that sometimes they just have more photorealistic people. He's a human. That's just why you think that. But they've had some more photorealistic humans. For example, Rafik is not an invitational card.
He should be, though. Next.
All right. Brian re-enters the battlefield.
A challenger appears.
Wolf Briar Elemental. You know, I saw this picture ahead of time. They had it somewhere up on the site, I think maybe in the section that gives parts of the story. Mm. But I really didn't – I just kind of noticed the elemental. I didn't even realize there's wolves all around it. Well, there's wolves all around it. It's the Wolf Briar Elemental.
Wolf.
Wolf. It costs 2 and 2 green, and it's a 4/4, so it's a 4/4 for 4. Not bad. It's a rare. It's an elemental. And as multi-kicker of a green, not 1 and a green, not 2 and a green, not 3 green, whatever, but 1 green. When Wolfbriar Elemental enters the battlefield, put a 2/2 green wolf creature token onto the battlefield for each time it was kicked.
Yeah, it's only slightly ridiculous.
Crazy go nuts.
You want this... We talked a bit when we were previewing Zendikar cards. We talked about the heavy mana commitment that seemed to be from a lot of the cards. You remember? Cards were requiring specific mana from one type. And it's kind of interesting following up Shards of Alara and the Alara sets because these are all the same mana. In fact, we've only seen one gold card, period, this block, and that's the Nova Blast Worm. This thing really needs a lot of green. To think that you need 3 green mana on turn 5 to be able to play this and get anything. But in a mono green deck, like my Chewy, don't you have a Primacrux deck now?
Yeah.
Yeah, this thing is going to go crazy. 6 power and toughness on turn 5 and up from there. Of course, again, let it be said, while I think the temptation is there to wait for another green, I am happy playing this guy as a 4/4 on turn 4 and smashing face.
Yeah, I'd only wait if I had
if you knew
the other forest in my hand.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, it's good.
It is pretty nuts.
All right, next.
Whose turn is it?
It doesn't matter.
It's Mike's turn, technically. But okay. Whoever likes it.
Groundswell. Costs a green. It's an instant. It is common. Charged creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn. Landfall. This is another instant with landfall. If you had a land enter the battlefield under your control this turn, that creature gets +4/+4 until end of turn instead.
This card sucks. No, it doesn't. It's awesome.
Was Might of Old Krosa an instant or a sorcery?
The Might of Old Krosa was an instant, but if you played it during your main phase, it had the same effect. So,
okay.
So this is very much a different take on Might of Old Krosa, except this is potentially more, more and less restrictive. More restrictive in that, you know, Might of Old Krosa didn't matter if you had a land in hand or not, but this thing is not limited. This can actually be a combat trick.
Yeah.
Like for the 4/4. To get the
biggest benefit from the might, you have to say, oh, here it comes. But for this one, all you got to do is play a land. People do that all the time.
I did that once just yesterday.
And again, you don't even have to play a sack land, and then it's not saying when you play this, drop a land or whatever. It's just if you've already played a land this turn. Mm-hmm. Or had a land enter the battlefield, I should say. So, I like it. And you know what? If it's the opponent's turn, usually that +2/+2, if it throws off their combat math, may be enough anyway. So, I'd play it.
I like it. It does not suck.
Correct.
This next card sucks.
Okay.
Well, one of these next cards sucks.
Only one of them.
Yeah. I'll take the non-sucky one because I keep getting... Well, this one doesn't suck. Yeah, this one's pretty cool, actually. Sajiri Merfolk. For 1 and a blue, it's an uncommon 2/1 Merfolk Soldier. 2/1 for 2. Nice. As long as you control a plains, Sajiri Merfolk has first strike and lifelink. Wait, what?
That's big.
Where did this come from? Is this like freaking Shards again? Oh, this is from Conflux.
Huh?
What, land types matter? Other land types matter?
Lands matter.
Well, okay. Shut your noise.
It's not going to say if you control some land that has first strike and luck. No, that's too easy.
This, and it was previewed in limited information, and as they talked about there, a lot of times in limited, you're not going to be running a mono color deck. This is part of it is just an acknowledgement toward limited play while, like Mike said, kind of keeping it within the confines of Zendikar. It's not quite multicolor because it's not saying like a white creature or anything like that. It's the land that makes the difference.
I'll give you that.
I like 2/1 first strikers with go ahead.
Blah, 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 blah.
And, you know, Zendikar's themes, they're trying to do this interblock synergy. So, I mean, the Land Matters theme is important enough when you're talking about coming after a multicolored block. But they have to throw a little more specific bones here and there.
Yeah, like if the whole Bant Exalted deck was still around, is it?
Not really.
That's too bad.
Not without,
because it would,
not without,
this would be completely nuts in it.
Yeah, I like 2/1 first strikers with lifelink for 2. I like that a lot. Especially, again... This doesn't require you to have a white mana to play it. And that, I think, is significant.
That would be because it is, yes.
Unfortunately, if this card and the next card, which is arguably worse, but if this card and the next card got into a fight, the next card would still win.
This card sucks.
It's not... terrible. I feel like I'm defending all these things. This is not as good a card, but this has something very important. This is the Calcite Snapper. It costs 1 and 2 blue. It's a turtle.
Turtle.
I was waiting for
it. Yeah.
It's a common. It's a 1/4.
Common? Oh, no.
And it has Shroud, which is the most important word on here. Now, landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may switch Calcite Snapper's power and toughness until end of turn. Thank goodness that doesn't require it. Now, Let's get this right out of the way.
It sucks.
Before the instant rules changes with combat damage using the stack, this would have been better. Because you play land, you switch it to a 4-1, you attack, you put damage on the stack, and then you pop the land or a Terramorphic Expanse or whatever to switch it back. And people did that trick all the time with these sort of convertible ones. There was the turtle from Lorwyn.
Changeling.
There was a related guy in Torment who you could discard a card to switch his power and toughness. Quite frankly, those cards. Thank you. Those cards always annoyed me on the other end because I felt like I just couldn't get around it. Like, because four is pretty huge. This guy is more fair. He's going to be less on offense because if you switch that power and toughness, you're committed. And you can either switch it back before you assign damage or you just leave it there. But either way, you're in. But to me, it's not the offensive power here. It's the fact that he's a 1-4 for 3 at common with Shroud. It's going to take a while to get through that.
Yeah, he's like cracking Hatchling on
Woods. It's going to take forever to get...
He's like Kraken Hatchling. Except Kraken Hatchling, eventually, you can go ahead and attack with a 2-2 and then say, oh, Burst Lightning.
If you really wanted to do that. But
if you needed to get through, and trust me, I've seen some times where you have to get through a Kraken Hatchling. Yeah,
but I mean, it's a Kraken Hatchling on Roids. He's like, none shall pass.
And, wow. Gandalf is rolling over in his grave. And he actually can kill some very small things. And the Kraken Hatchling really can't. So, I agree. This is not a good card, but you're going to get frustrated by one in the future, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. Probably just this weekend. I'm sure I'll be going, probably freaking stupid beep turtle.
And you're going to think, man, okay, I finally drew this Magma Rift, so it only cost me a land to get rid of this guy, except I still can't.
I fail at life.
So, but I think that's all we really need to see about the Snapper.
Inferno Draw.
No, he's not good. But really, I've learned, never underestimate Shroud.
Actually, never. He doesn't suck. He's actually really good at what he does. If you ignore completely the power toughness swap crap stupid thing, he's better than the McKindy Shieldmate.
Well, I guess the last thing I'm going to say about that is I completely agree. I think he is much better on defense. But if you have that opportunity where you've set yourself up, you've got some other good creatures and you want to punch through, you play a land and switch this guy and swing, and they have – all of a sudden, they have to deal with this guy, and no arrow volley trap or pit vault trap is going to take him down.
Yeah, one of their guys is going to die probably.
One of their guys is going to die, or they're going to take four, and you're still going to have this guy. But that's a much more situational thing, really. For defense, all you have to do is play him. But all I say is don't forget about that other thing, or you might find yourself going, four. Crap, I have to kill the stupid thing.
There are a few things worse in life than having to kill the stupid thing.
I don't have a dislike for it because I think it's not good. I have a dislike for it because it's just so aggravating.
Annoying.
I haven't even played a game with it yet, and it aggravates me to no end already.
Turn one, Kraken Hatchling. Turn three, Kalsite Snapper, followed up by a McKindy Shieldmate. You're like, meh.
Must kill. Turn two was a welcome turn, by the way.
Your little goblin tokens are like, boss, we can't do it.
They've got a blade. The wee turtles!
They've got the wee turtles.
Save me from the wee turtles. Wow, did I just make a Simpsons Chewy. Joke? Okay. God, who am I and what have I done with Chewy?
We got three more to go.
Oh yeah, there's one in the article.
Chewy, I got a question for you. Did you really want the one that was covered today? Or can I have that one when we get to
it? Sure, why not?
Okay.
He is awesome.
Well then, let's keep going.
All right, because I won't take the vampire. Enclave Elite. It's a 2 and a blue common merfolk soldier. It's a 2/2 for 3. Multi-kicker of 1 and a blue has Island Walk and enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter for each time it was kicked. So it's the blue out of that cycle, except it's a 2/2 for 3 with Island Walk instead of all the other things.
Right. You can't play it at 1 for a 1/1, unlike some of the others.
Right. And the Island Walk is going to be, I think, a lot bigger than the Swamp Walk in, as far as limited goes.
You think so?
Because more people are able to play islands because there's usually one really strong black drafter and everybody else sucks.
That's true. Well, I'm thinking in terms of sealed. In sealed, you just play the best cards that you've got. And then
you board in the Island Walker, Swamp Walker as necessary.
Right. Yeah. The black guy, the guy with black may even just may even just splash black for like a disfigure.
It's gotta be a black blue thing.
I don't mean playing this guy. I mean playing against this guy.
You could be my creature. Don't matter if you're black or blue.
So again, we've seen all but the white ones of this cycle, and most of them have evasion, except the green one.
But if you're thinking about my baby, it don't matter if you're black or blue.
And the red one has haste.
And the red one is lizards. He's cute.
I think I like the red one
better. He's got a cute lizard. Hi. Oh my god, I've lost my freaking mind.
Quickly, Mike, to the next card. Okay. We're nearly there.
The Butcher of Malakir.
Fading fast.
Well, he's just called Butcher of Malakir. Costs 5 and 2 black. He's a vampire warrior. He's a 5/4 with flying, and he is rare. So for 7, 5/4 flying. Whenever Butcher of Malakir or another creature you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, each opponent sacrifices a creature.
I hate Grave Pact.
You know, I always thought Grave Pact was unfair at 4 mana, so I'm glad that's not what we're looking at here.
Yeah.
It really does belong at a higher cost.
Uh-huh.
This just happens to be attached to a 5/4 flyer.
Hey, I don't care as long as it costs more.
The nice thing about playing this guy is that you'll always at least get it when he dies.
Yeah.
And as much as I said I'll never play with Grave Pact, I'll still play with this guy. I'll throw one in my vampire deck just to see how it works.
Well, yeah.
Because it's not Grave Pact.
And all of a sudden, you know, you play this guy, but then you swing with everybody else. And all of a sudden it's like, all right, do I kill the guy that's not attacking me and not dealing me damage? Or do I kill the things that are coming at me, and I'm going to have to lose some dudes? On top of...
Old Smokey. His verdict is always guilty. His sentence is always death. Yeah.
I'd like to appeal.
There's
no appeal.
You don't get no damn appeal. You get nothing. You die. Good day, sir.
I'm sorry, but your sentence will be executed pending. There's no stay of execution pending appeal.
Brian tried to make that funny, and then he lapsed.
I know. let me make it up. We got one last guy to do, and this guy is really interesting.
Sorry, we'd burn down your village. Here's an ogre.
I don't think this is quite the same. All right.
I'm going to burn down your village. Here's an ogre.
That's more like it. All right. This is K'Zul, Tyrant of the Cliffs. And yes, this is the same K'Zul as in K'Zul Warlord. I thought K'Zul was a place. No, it's a person or an ogre. K'Zul, Tyrant of the Cliffs. He costs 5, 3 and 2 red. And he's a 5/4.
Nerds!
Ogre warrior.
Okay, no one's right. Revenge of the Nerds. Never mind.
Whenever a creature an opponent controls attacks, if you're the defending player, put a 3/3 red ogre creature token onto the battlefield unless that creature's controller pays 3.
Okay, actually, it's you're going to burn down my village, here's a dude.
None shall pass.
None shall pass.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. What one thing I found amusing was that I've gotten in the habit of going onto the forums of the main Magic site when they do a preview to see what other people think.
Do you ever and post?
Not generally.
I was going to say, because if you do, you should have a link to the mana pool in your signature.
But one of the things I found amusing was that somebody said, oh, clearly they've got this thing here about if you're the defending player to distinguish between if you're being attacked or if your planeswalker's being attacked. And what I thought was, no, it's
for multiplayer, you idiot. Yeah. Hey, dummy.
So that you don't play this guy and all of a sudden everybody's like, okay, whenever anybody attacks, Brian gets a creature.
Yay, creature.
So therefore, all the game stops. Now, the question I had about that was, aren't you still the defending player if your planeswalker is being attacked anyway?
You know, I think because of the way this is worded in juxtaposition with other, you know, attack taxing cards, I think you are. Because, like, propaganda says whenever a creature attacks you.
So.
Right?
Propaganda. Let me scroll down. It says nothing about planeswalkers.
I'm going to.
What does propaganda say?
It says creatures can't attack you unless their controller pays two for each creature he or she controls that's attacking you.
And okay. Ghostly Prison says the same thing.
Okay, no, that's completely different. Because that's keeping them from attacking at all. It's not just taxing.
Okay, hang on. Let me search for defending player in quotes. Search. There we go.
Good luck with that.
Well, look, everything that has something walk. Great.
Hey, you guys keep talking, and I'll look it up in the comprehensive rules. I have a copy saved on my computer.
You are such a rules dork, and that's why we love you.
I'll check the planeswalker section. You can keep talking.
I have nothing to say.
In fact, it will be necessary, because this will take a minute to load.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Your sister's hot.
Hey, you.
Wow, that came out of nowhere.
So anyway, it's very important that if you ever want to attack this person again who has Kazul, you need to get rid of Kazul first. Because otherwise, if you try to attack at all and you're not already way ahead in terms of mana development, you're going to have a bad time. Because that ogre is just going to stand in front of your guy, or he's going to be coming at you later, or both.
Yeah. Okay, what else does this guy say? Okay, let me do a search. Rules text for... Oh my god, click! Search. Search?
Oh, man, this is hard.
I got nothing. I got nothing that contains defending player, in quotes, and your, Y-O-U apostrophe R-E.
This is the first time I've ever wished that Gatherer had the tips and tricks cards in the database. Then I could just read one of the Planeswalker tips and tricks cards and probably get the answer. I'm sick of looking for this. Whatever. No, wait. Haha. During the combat phase, the active player is the attacking player. Creatures that player controls may attack. During the combat phase of a two-player game, the non-active player is the defending player. That player and planeswalkers he or she controls may be attacked. So you are the defending player.
It has nothing to do with combat in a duel sense. It's always the other guy. And then I guess once you move into combat, it's still always the other guy. And if it's multiplayer, then it's always the other guy that you're attacking, whether you're attacking him or his planeswalker.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right, good to know.
During the combat phase of a multiplayer game, there may be one or more defending players, depending on the variant being played. Oh, blah, 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 blah. Unless... Okay, never mind. Yes, it works how we expect.
Yay, good, good. So that means you can still... Kazul doesn't care if it's him or a planeswalker, or you or a planeswalker.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone's trying to attack your Chandra, they still have to pay three or you get a dude. What up, dude? Ogre dude. And
so you roll into 2-2.
And he pops out, he's a 3-3, he's got a trophy full of beer, and he's like, nerds! And then at the end of the second movie, he joins you, and the whole thing jumps the shark. Or nukes the fridge, which is apparently the new way of saying jump the shark.
Yeah.
Okay, now for his flavor text, I picture Seamus from Family Guy. Warning to those who scale the cliffs without paying the tribute. It's a long way down. These jokes working for you?
They're all right.
Anyway.
So, alluring siren, make your guy attack. Or other such effects like suicidal charge, I guess.
Bull whip is cool. Hurry up and give me a dude.
Get over here.
No, that's grappling hook.
Fumiko the low blood makes all the guys attack.
That's dangerous, though.
Not if you get a bunch of three guys, 3-3s.
I really don't have that much to say about him. I think he's really cool.
He's nifty.
But, you know, a 3-3 is going to be bigger than a lot of the things that can come at you. The only thing is that in a game, they're going to see it coming. So they're not going to attack you unless they think that they have some way of getting around him or the 3-3s or both. Don't get me wrong, it's still very good because he forces the opponent to stop attacking until they can deal with him.
Or forces him to eat up some mana.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's all I got.
Hey, dummy. We sure have worked a whole lot of pop... Well, I sure have worked a whole lot of pop culture references into this episode. Do you think people can handle it this many?
If they care. Maybe they do.
Hey, okay. I mean, I don't know if I should edit some of these out.
Well,
I think can't have, the people will be okay.
I don't know, man. This much pop culture at once, it might kill somebody. I don't want to have that on my conscience. You know, unless it's someone I don't like.
Right.
Maybe I can get that person at work to listen to this episode and see if they die.
If we don't like you, send us an email. We can send you the special director's cut of the episode.
Oh, God, don't say that. Ben will email us. Like, so you wanted me to email you? Like, anyway, so that's been some Zendikar previews.
Oh, hey, we did get an email, didn't we? It was a pretty cool email, I think.
What?
Oh, we did.
We did?
Yes.
I know Katie sent us an email asking about Fate's Fetters.
Fate's Fetters.
I thought that was really cool. I'd forgotten about it.
That's cool? Well, we'll read it then.
Well, I don't have it in front of me, and I probably deleted it.
Well, I'll pull it up then, because I don't delete emails from listeners until... I don't ever delete them. I just archive them. Katie, can you Fate's Fetters a Planeswalker? It came up in the marathon game session we played on Saturday. And I said... Well, at first I had to go, no, you can't do that. Wait, hang on. And I had to go look up Fate's Fetters.
Yeah, I was the same.
Because I'm like, what does it say? It says enchant permanent, and enchanted permanents activated abilities can't be played, and if it's a creature, it can't attack or block. And I looked at – I thought about Planeswalkers for a minute, and I said, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because people used to use it to shut down Umezawa's Shite.
Oh, I'm not going to edit that one out because that was an honest mistake.
Yeah.
Buck, banana, fana, fo, what? It also says you can't activated abilities can't be played unless they're mana abilities. But I thought about it, and none of the planeswalkers have mana abilities that I know of, do they?
They don't.
All right then. So yes,
I believe so, Tim.
You can stop all planeswalker abilities from being used with a Faith's Fetters. And I said, what was the decision they came to? And she said, they said I could. But we wanted to know if we read it right, since all of us have just stepped back into the game. It became important because on the next turn, without the planeswalker, I was able to win. I was like, oh, yeah. Katie is kicking some ass in marathon gaming sessions. Oh, yeah.
Faith's Fetters is one of those cards that'll just always be the greatest.
Yeah, it's pretty freaking mm-hmm. awesome. I haven't even thought about Faith's Fetters since they printed planeswalkers. It just got so much better. Which I didn't think was possible. Gain 4 life, make target planeswalker irrelevant. Alright. Let's see, we get any other emails that are worth talking about lately?
I believe that's it.
Yeah, that was
that is
it.
The last. The only one we've gotten in a while. Okay, then. So, final thoughts, Mike?
I read Civil War today.
Marvel?
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm sorry.
I thought it was
pretty good. There's like 18 Civil War trades out there. Which one did you read?
I got a big hardback, and it had the 7 books, and it has a bunch of extra stuff in the back half, like a special edition of the Daily Bugle and a bunch of storyboards and whatever, and interviews with the artist and writer.
DVD extras.
Yeah, pretty much.
Word? So you read the actual Civil War itself.
Yeah, it's
there was also like Frontline and the various Civil War crossovers that went throughout all the different books. And apparently, okay, I can't remember. I do remember that my boy James, who used to do the Comic Book Savant podcast, who got me into podcasting mm-hmm. in the first place, he really hated Civil War because it was so convoluted and so stupid. But then he tried to read it all, I think.
I can imagine that reading it all would cause some
hemorrhaging
problems in a person's brain, but just reading the seven Civil War books, I mean, it all seemed pretty straightforward to me. I didn't get lost, and I haven't read comics in like
I don't think
comics like that in like 10 years.
I don't think it was a matter of getting lost. I think it was more of a matter of frustration.
I don't know.
I didn't read it. I do have Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2. Oh my god! Quick interjection: Activision let their license expire to use the Marvel characters and their downloadable content, so all the downloadable content from Marvel Ultimate Alliance 1 and 2 is gone. You can't download the Juggernaut, you can't download the character pack for Ultimate Alliance 2, you can't download the Heroes and or Villains pack for Ultimate Alliance 1. It's just gone with no warning. It was just yanked from the marketplace on Xbox.
What a bunch of morons.
Do you have any idea how much money they could have made at the last minute? They said, hey, by the way, we're going to have to pull this on Friday. Do you have any idea?
Go ahead and buy it now.
Yeah. If you're going to get this, you better get it now because we're going to pull it. Do you have any idea how much money they would have made? But no, they were just like, oh, it's Go-Will, and it's gone. And I'm so pissed off because I was waiting on it to be Deal of the Week before I bought the character pack. And I don't get the freaking character pack. It's a good thing I'm not an achievement whore because now I'd only ever be able to get 1,000 out of 1,250. Because they upped it to 1250 with the characters pack.
Man.
But I'm not an achievement horse. I don't really care. I read this on an Xbox 360 achievements.org, so they were like, arr! Anyway, you mentioned Civil War, and it was too close. The storyline in Ultimate Alliance 2 is based loosely on Civil War. Okay. So was that it?
Okay. It was nice to sit down and spend most of the morning reading comics. Reminded me of times where I didn't have to worry about as much.
Yeah. Now I get to sit down on the John and read comics. Been working my way, actually just finished working my way through Astro City on the John over the last couple weeks. And there's lots of Astro, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Astro City books. Mm-hmm. I need to get Astro City of the Dark Ages. Anyway.
Yeah, I got Civil War because my mom had gone to a comic shop to get my brother and I cards for Christmas, and they ended up giving her little gift certificates. So I went down there, and I was like, huh, maybe I'll buy some comics. And I was trying to choose between that or, what was it? Kingdom Come and Ooh. The Ghost in the Shell. But I said, Kingdom Come is going to be in print for forever, so if I want to pick it up later, I can. And then The Ghost in the Shell, that'll go in and out, and it's not something that's that important.
Have you read Kingdom Come?
No.
Oh, man, you want to borrow mine?
Sure.
It's freaking great.
I mean, I'm just interested in it because it's Alex Ross.
Oh, so you just want to look at the pretty pictures. But the story is great, too. Mm-hmm. Why are we talking about comics? I love this podcast.
Okay, that's my final thoughts. I'm done.
Brian?
I've been trying to think of a final thought. I had one somewhere along the line, and then the last 10 minutes somehow. My semester started up again, and it's a fairly light semester. I generally, any given day of the week, I only have one class, so that's pretty nice. And I'm trying to focus and get through this last year so I can go ahead and start heading into the bar exam and knock it out. But Christmas break gave me a chance to sit down and do some things I hadn't done in a while either, like play some Final Fantasy, play some Chrono Trigger, and relax. So that was good too. Again, like Mike said, kind of a simpler time.
I hate you guys.
Just don't have time to sit down for a while and just play games anymore, you know? But looking forward to the pre-release this weekend, looking forward to seeing Da Chue.
Oh, yeah, after we're done recording, we need to discuss the pre-release.
Okay. Well, then, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, because I have Ghost Hunters to watch, and they have the State of the Union address to watch, because they're actually, you know, paying attention to the world around them. Ha! Losers.
It turns out penguins rule our government, like the ones from the old Bud Ice commercials.
Doobie-doobie-doo. Drink Bud Ice, but who are the penguins? Holy crap, that's where I got my sign-off from. It's totally...
Really?
Well, not directly, but it's like, drink Bud Ice, but beware the penguins. Thanks for listening, and see?
You're saying that's where you took the inflection from, but the meaning is completely different.
Yes, drink beer, watch out for killer penguins.
It's not like you're saying, go play some magic, but beware some... It's not like you're saying, go play some magic, but beware the krakens or something. So.
Krakens. Yeah... I've been playing a fair bit of Modern Warfare 2. Wait, was that your final thought?
That was my final thought. Is this your
final
thought?
Bit of Modern Warfare 2. I'm slowly but surely trying to unlock attachments for weapons and level up, and I haven't decided if I want to go through all this effort so I can prestige and start over again. I just don't know. But anyway, I really want to pick up... When I went to see Corey, he showed me Fallout 3. And said, you have to play this game. It's great. Now, Corey, who, between WoW and work, has no time for anything, has played through Fallout 3 twice and is about to start a third time. He said, it's that good. I said, wow. And he explained to me what all the downloadable content and whatnot was. And there's 5 downloadable content packs. They're $10 a piece. And that's expensive. Or I could just get the Game of the Year edition for $60, which is Fallout 3 and all of the downloadable content.
Hey.
Yeah. And if I can find a used, it's even cheaper. And oh my god, I ordered a triple cymbal pack from Amazon for the Rock Band kit. The drum kit. Triple cymbals.
Triple cymbals?
Yeah. Hell yeah. My buddy Jimmy has it. And I played it his...
Does it add another color to the game?
No. It enhances 3 of the colors that are in there.
Okay.
It's really cool on the fills and the big rock endings. The game knows if you're hitting a cymbal or hitting the pad. It makes a different noise, which is awesome.
Okay.
But yeah, I played it at my Jimmy's, and he it was awesome. And they came in today. I sent them to the parents' house. It was in a big-ass box. My old man called me. He's like, you got a package here today. I said, what? He said, it's from Amazon. It's a big-ass box. I was like, sweet! So... Yes, that's where I am. I'm thinking of getting Fallout 3. If I can find one used, the Game of the Year edition used, I will totally buy it. And I ordered the triple cymbal pack, and next time we all talk about video games on the podcast, and I will tell everyone how awesome it is, because it's awesome.
Awesome.
Awesome. Word 'em up, dog. Anyway, so, yes, this has been episode 115. 14? 12?
15.
115. of the Mana Pool. We're all about some previews. Have fun at the pre-release. Have fun at the launch. Hey, just have fun. Whatever. And thank you all very much for listening. And beware the penguins.